hear? One of the kids said, I can hear them squeak. Another, I can hear a very soft scraping or something. Then I asked them to put the things into their mouths between their teeth and to really taste all there is to taste when they bit into them. The classroom was quiet except for some soft smacking noises. One of the boys said, I taste an explosion of sweetness in my mouth. Another student called out, Wow, it's sweet and sour at the same time. Other kids experienced the same taste sensation. And what was it that I put into their hands? Two small raisins. They had put them into their mouths plenty of times, but they had never tasted or seen them the way they did that day. And they had certainly never heard them squeak. The I Am From Mars exercise is an enjoyable, effective way to help kids experiment with paying attention in a new and creative way. Open-minded observation. Young children are usually quite good at open-minded, inquisitive, and non-judgmental observation. But as we grow older, we are beset with doubts and opinions. Older kids often feel insecure and think they are not good enough. I did another observation exercise with a class of slightly older kids, sixth graders. Their task was to look carefully at 12 objects on a tray. After 30 seconds, the tray would be covered with a cloth, and the kids had to write down the objects they just saw. One of the girls was close to panicking and said, I can't do this. I can't remember a thing. It saddened me to see her so unsure of herself, convinced that she could not do the exercise before she had even tried. I assured her that her thoughts are not always right. She tried to concentrate, and on her first attempt, she managed to remember 4 items from the tray, a score shared with several other kids. She was surprised. We did the exercise with the 12 objects 3 times a week for 2 weeks. The scores increased exponentially, as did the children's self-confidence. They all remembered things better and found it easier to concentrate. And last but not least, they enjoyed it. How to do this at home. Mindful attention requires practice. It does not just happen. Like playing sports or a musical instrument, you learn by practicing frequently and thoughtfully. You can start practicing the minute you wake up. There you are, facing a brand new day full of things that are yet to happen. Now that you are awake, you might as well notice your legs swinging over the edge of the bed and taking you to the bathroom where you can have a shower and feel the water's gentle caress on your skin. Waking up and realizing that you are waking up is a unique experience. You notice things that you would not normally be aware of. You notice that your body or head is still tired, or that you feel well-rested and fit, or perhaps that you are instantly stressed out. Mindful waking up helps you not get ahead of yourself. It grounds you in the here and now, allowing you to do things slowly before moving up a gear. If you are mindful of what you are doing while you are doing it, and feel what is happening while it is happening, you are present. And when you are present in something, you learn something. Not with hindsight, but right now. Look, but don't judge. When you learn to look at things without interference from your thoughts, you will realize that you are seeing more and interpreting less. You will also retain more because when you look attentively, you really see things. Here's an exercise for young kids. This is a fun exercise to do on your way to school. Try to remember 5 things that you see. A tree, a traffic sign, an unusual house, the entrance to your school, the classroom door. What do they look like? You can train yourself to see more and more properties of the tree or the traffic sign, such as colors and shapes, spots and stripes. By looking without judging whether something is pretty or ugly, you will see more of the world around you. And for older kids, pick up a twig and draw it on a piece of paper. Draw exactly what you see and not what you think you are seeing. Do this a couple of days in a row, and you'll begin to see more and more of the twig, while the drawing is becoming more and more accurate. Are you listening to me? It is not always easy to really listen to what is being said. Let's face it, our minds are often elsewhere and not here. But like looking, listening is something you can learn. All you need is deliberate, mindful attention and to learn to recognize its absence. Here are some simple listening exercises. Listening to a sound without immediately wanting to label it strengthens our ability to really listen to one another. What sounds can you hear right now? Are they high or low pitched? Humming or buzzing sounds? Can you detect some kind of rhythm? Are the sounds behind you or in front of you? Far away or close? Are they outside you? Can you hear any sounds inside yourself? Listening to one another. A fun dinner time exercise. Everybody is given 2 minutes to talk about his or her day or to share an important experience while the others listen without passing judgment. Listening with a genuine desire to hear and understand what the other is saying is absolutely invaluable. Just like you strengthen a muscle by working it, you can train your attention muscle when using all of the senses. Mindful eating. Eating with mindful attention may seem simple, but it can be quite a challenge. Try to get the whole family to eat one attentive mouthful without comments such as, "Ugh, yummy, we eat this all the time," or, "I don't like this." It can be a surprising experience. Discuss what you smell, notice, taste, and feel in your mouth when you take a mindful bite. Hold it in your mouth for a moment and swallow. Take a bite and note the following. What do you really taste once you stop thinking about the foods being either tasty or nasty? Remember, these are just thoughts. Do you have a salty, sweet, or bitter taste in your mouth? Or a mixture of all three? Does it feel hard or soft in your mouth, rough or smooth? What is happening in your mouth while you are eating? What do you experience? Can you feel your mouth watering? What is your tongue doing? What happens when you swallow? And when do you lose track of your mouthful? Mindful eating is important. When you do it, you can really taste the peanut in the peanut butter, the juiciness of the apple, the sweet softness of the banana. And another important thing, you will notice sooner when you are full. Chapter 5. Out of your head and into your body. While attention to your breathing and your senses gives you an immediate experience of this moment, in this chapter I will talk about awareness of the entire body. This adds yet another dimension to mindfulness practice. While I've geared the material in this chapter more toward older kids, younger children also benefit greatly from mindful awareness of the body. Your body can tell you a great deal. Like a finely tuned instrument, it responds to emotions such as shock, tension, fear, and happiness, to cheerful thoughts or a head full of worries. These signals are all there for a reason, telling you something about your experience of this moment, about your limits and your needs. Stiff shoulders, heart palpitations, a knot in your stomach, feeling too tired to get up, or the opposite, bouncing out of bed, feeling fresh and in high spirits. Your body registers it all. While we may pick up on most of these signals, we do not always respond properly. We tend to dismiss unpleasant feelings or thoughts by passing judgment or behaving in a certain way. Don't cry. Crying is childish. Or, the work needs to get done, so I'll keep going. Sometimes we simply deny the signals. Tired? Not at all. The upshot is that we carry on working, pleasing others, playing games on the computer, or taking care of too much all by ourselves. And to get rid of the horrible feeling inside, we start looking for an escape. By snacking, becoming excessively rambunctious or withdrawn, or taking our negative emotions out on someone else. But these behaviors offer no real and lasting solution. The result is double trouble. That unpleasant feeling is now compounded by destructive and unhealthy habits. Mindfulness teaches you how to move out of your head and into your body. By taking a brief time out and paying attention to your body, you will notice that you are still angry about something that was said to you yesterday. You do not feel safe with a particular group of kids. You had far too much to eat. You feel incredibly energetic or tired. You feel sad. You really need to go to the bathroom, but you are not giving yourself the time. What is your body telling you? Most of the time, your body listens to you. When you are healthy and you want to walk, your body starts walking. When you want to work or play a computer game, your body sits down at your computer. When you want to eat, your mouth opens and you chew and swallow. If you teach children to listen to their body's signals, they will learn from an early age that the body not only does what it is told, but also sends out important signals that they can feel. They can feel fatigue and energy, as well as pain and the sensation of being full. They can also learn that there is no need to think about what they feel, but should rather focus on the feeling itself. Acknowledging and bringing attention to the feeling in their body is enough. Having done this, you have a choice. What do I do with what I feel? Where do I want to take it? I taught the following out of your head and into your body technique to a class of high school kids, and they were glad when the time came to do this exercise. They'd take off their glasses, remove their sneakers, and lie down with cushions under their heads, some on their stomachs, others on their backs. The class would breathe a collective sigh. I asked them to be aware that they were lying down and to direct their attention to the body lying there. What was going on? What did they notice while lying there? Some noticed that they were restless or unable to relax. Others noticed that their back ached, or that the floor of the sports hall was really hard or too cold. I asked them to pay close attention to their body and to feel from their head down to their toes what was happening, to bring their awareness to their body without reacting or ignoring anything. It was quiet in the class, completely quiet. The air was filled with concentration, attention, and amazement. One foot feels cold and the other feels warm. That's unusual, one boy said when we were sharing our experiences. Another teen commented, I noticed that my knee hurts really badly. Weird, I hadn't noticed it before. Yet another student said, I only just noticed that I really need to go to the bathroom. Others yawned profusely, looked a bit pale, and said they felt unbelievably tired. A slightly older boy observed, I've been having a lot of stomach pain recently, and now it's back. I asked him to direct some friendly attention to his stomach to see what was going on, and after a short while he said, I feel I'm scared of getting ostracized. It's not happening to me right now, but it is to others. I'm afraid it's going to happen to me, too. And I feel bad for the others, but I don't know what to do about it. This comment resulted in an open discussion about ostracism. Limits. By listening to your body's signals, you can learn more about your limits. How far can you go? How do you know? When you do the following exercise with your children, they will experience for themselves when enough is enough. Enough is not too much, not too little, but just right. Stretching and breathing. Stand with your feet firmly on the floor. Throw one of your arms up in the air as high as possible and make it as long as you can. Let's see if your hand can reach the ceiling. How far can you reach? Feel how far your arm can reach while your feet remain on the floor and you carry on breathing as normal. How high can you go? There must be a limit somewhere. Where's yours? And how can you tell? Are you holding your breath? Do you think you cannot go any further? Are your muscles aching, perhaps? What do you notice? Lower your arm again. Feel how your arm is doing and whether it feels any different from your other arm. What are you feeling right now? While breathing normally, throw both arms up in the air as high as possible, while your feet remain glued to the floor. Imagine some nice juicy apples on a branch just above you. You would love to pick them, but your arms are just a bit too short to reach. They are so high up. Make your arms as long as you possibly can, and maybe even a little longer. What are you feeling in your body right now? Maybe you notice that you are holding your breath. This is one of your body's ways of telling you that you have gone far enough. Maybe your arms have started aching. Again, a signal that you have taken it far enough. Now that you know this, you can make your arms just long enough to carry on breathing without pain and maybe pick an apple while you are at it. How far can you go now? Where is your limit? Can you feel it? Once you have felt your limit, slowly lower both arms again. Looking back at the experience, what do you feel? Do your arms feel heavy or light? Do you feel a tingling sensation or something else? And how about your breathing? What do you now know about enough? And is enough always enough? To conclude this exercise, or at a time when you feel a bit tired, you can perk yourself up and make your skin tingle by standing where you are, cupping your hands and wrapping yourself rhythmically on the legs, buttocks, belly, chest, arms, neck, and shoulders. You finish the exercise by very gently tapping your fingers on your head, massaging your cheeks, face, and scalp. You can also do this to one another. Every time you do these kinds of exercises with your children, you help them become a bit more aware of their body. Limits are important. They indicate how far you can go in eating, playing sports, teasing, or testing the rules at home. In their enthusiasm or their eagerness to get what they want, children often go on too long or take things too far, not knowing where to draw the line. This is something they need to learn from their parents, but limits can be tricky for parents too. Should a child always finish his or her meal or not? Should you restrict your child's time playing computer games to an hour a day, or let the child play as long as he or she wants? Where do you draw the line? Too much freedom is not good, but nor is an excessively authoritarian approach. It is usually best to find a happy medium, with room for negotiation and for the child to take responsibility for his or her own actions. A mother to her daughter. I would like you to tidy your room this week. Can you do it before Saturday? Is that a deal? But the girl would rather do it on Sunday, and that is all right too. So they reach an agreement. Firmness and flexibility combined are effective when it comes to setting limits. And so are learning to recognize when to just let things be, and that what you have agreed to already is enough. Calm down, relax. Some children cannot sit still for more than a few seconds, have little sense of limits, and find it difficult to calm down. Above all, they struggle to relax, taking their twitching, fidgeting, and squirming to record levels. The youngest son of a friend of mine is an open and impulsive little guy. His big eyes are never still, his mouth never stops. His legs are constantly moving, and he is quick to bolt, like a young deer, from the table, from homework, from a game, or from a conversation on the sofa together. My friend often says with a sigh, "Calm down, will you? Relax." To which his irritated response is, "It's not me who's doing the moving, it just happens." Exercise 4, the spaghetti test, helps you to consciously relax your body, which is different from relaxing through sports or reading. It is no better or worse, just different. Children like it when they know how to relax by doing the spaghetti test. In this test, they learn how to transform stiff and uncooked pieces of spaghetti in their body into soft and supple, perfectly cooked strands of pasta. Completely limp, totally relaxed. It helps them to recognize calm as calm and, after frequent practice, restless as restless. For the best results, kids should probably do this exercise when they are not at their most frantic. Maybe just after they have watched TV or had a bath. After the exercise, the children could try to not jump up straight away and instead stay focused on the calmness. They could remain lying down and remain calm just a bit longer until they notice that their body wants to start moving again without necessarily having to, without pressure. To their amazement, they will notice that calm and relaxation are nice. It gives them a bit of a break, a chance just to be. As kids become more familiar with the different signals of their body, relaxation, restlessness, fatigue, feeling full, they are also more likely to recognize those instances when they are unwell, when they feel nauseated or in pain. We can tell our child that most of the time our bodies are healthy and do what we want them to do. Walk, run, bike, play, work. But occasionally something is wrong. That is when you are ill. Something you can feel. "What is ill?" my 9-year-old son asked, when suddenly, for the first time, he experienced a very strange sensation in his belly. And that is the sentiment that the following story explores. One day, Squirrel was sitting on the moss under an old tree. She wasn't feeling well. Her belly ached. Cricket happened to be passing by and noticed at once. He said, "Squirrel, you're ill." "But what exactly is ill?" Squirrel wondered. She decided to ask Ant, who knew a lot about a lot of things. "Well," Ant said, scratching her head, "there are different kinds of ill. There's a little bit ill, quite a bit ill, and very seriously ill. Seriously ill is the worst kind." "So what happens when you're seriously ill, Ant?" Squirrel asked.
"Obviously, all kinds of things can happen, but usually nothing happens, nothing at all. After a while, you just get better again."
"By the way, how's your belly?" Ant asked.
"My belly?"
"Yes." That's when Squirrel realized that her stomach ache was gone. Based on a scene in Toontelligan's book, perhaps they knew everything. After sharing this story with your young child, you could ask the child, where do you think the stomachache went? Could there be a place where all the pain you have ever had goes? I bet there is such a place. What do you think? How to do this at home. How do I feel? What do you notice about your body? Do you ever have stomach pains or a headache? Or are you ever nauseated? When do you feel this? Would you like to talk or make a drawing about it? Does this feeling remain the same throughout the day? What can I do to help you? How does your body feel when you wake up? Do you feel well rested or tired? Draw a thermometer and fill in the thermometer to indicate how you feel. Tired at the bottom, well at the top. Draw a new one for each day of the week. Laughter is the best medicine. Stand in front of the mirror and start laughing. What is happening in your body? What else besides your voice is laughing? Your eyes, your cheeks, your mouth? Is your belly laughing too? And what about your shoulders? It can be great fun to do this with others. Mindful walking. When you run up the stairs really fast, are only your legs running? Is anything else running too? Please note exactly which muscles are getting in on the action. When you stop running, what do you notice about your body? What about your breathing, your muscles, your heartbeat? Please note how often you automatically break into a run and see if you can walk at a regular pace instead, unless you are in a great hurry or the house is on fire. Chapter 6. Weathering the Storm Inside. Our mind is not unlike a sea or an ocean. Storms, rain showers, or the sun can transform the surface of any expanse of water into a seething mass of terrifyingly high waves, or into a clear, smooth sheet through which you can see the great depths below. The same is true for us. A particularly challenging mood or intense emotions can crop up at any time. By not wishing these feelings away, or wishing they were different from what they are in the moment, you learn to notice the weather inside and to root yourself in what is really happening. What is the weather like inside? One of my children used to routinely wake up grumpy. This scenario went on for years. He would come stomping down the stairs, snorting with rage. It was hard on the steps and on me. "I told you I didn't want anything to eat, but you put out a plate anyway." Before I'd have a chance to respond, he'd let loose again. "Where did you leave my school bag? You always put it in the wrong place. Now I'll be late for school, and it's all your fault." The back door would slam shut with a loud and ruthless bang. Boom! These regular outbreaks of extremely rough inner weather eventually gave me the opportunity to recognize the first signs of an approaching storm, and I decided to try something I hadn't done before. One morning, as soon as my son came downstairs, I asked him to sit at the table. He looked at me with anger, and I noticed he was really sleepy. He didn't want to do anything, least of all sit at the table with me. I took a few breaths and felt my shoulders bunched up with tension, but I decided to give him a friendly look anyway. I asked him again to sit down, just for a moment. Sulking, he did as I asked, elbows on table, head clutched in hands, teeth clenched. I asked him to observe carefully what was happening inside him. What was he feeling right in that moment? Thunder and lightning? A storm raging? How would he grade this storm? 8, 9, or a perfect 10? He opted for a 10 before telling me in an unusually subdued voice that he was worn out. For a while now, he had been pushing himself to the limit. Things were not going well in school. It was all too much. He was behind, even though he was trying really hard, and he didn't know what to do about it. His body slumped, and he gave in to that horrible feeling inside. Big tears dropped onto his breakfast. I wrapped an arm around his lanky body and just held him for a while. Your personal weather report. The personal weather report can help your child understand his or her interior world. This, in turn, allows you to acknowledge your child's mood and help him or her and yourself to accept it. By communicating with your child and not resisting the storm, you can teach your child not to resist it either and to become aware of his or her feelings. By acknowledging awful feelings, your child will learn that it is okay to have such feelings. The two of you can then look at what is needed right at that moment. A hug, a phone call to a friend, a joint effort to find a solution to the problem, or something completely different. As a parent, this also gives you the opportunity to scrutinize your own feelings and your tendency to react automatically. Although you may not be able to solve everything, you can stay close and enable your children to express and accept their emotions. You can show them that you are on their side and that you love them even during severe weather conditions. Your personal weather report. Sit down comfortably somewhere, close or half close your eyes, and take some time to determine how you are feeling right now. What is the weather like inside you? Do you feel relaxed and sunny inside? Or does it feel rainy or overcast? Is there a storm raging, perhaps? What do you notice? Without really thinking about it too much, summon the weather report that best describes your feelings at the moment. Once you know how you are doing right now, just let it be. Just as it is. There is no need to feel or do anything differently. You cannot change the weather outside either, can you? Stay close to this feeling for a while. Direct your friendly and curious attention to the clouds, the clear sky, or the storm that is brewing. This is how it is right now. Like the weather, you simply cannot change a mood. Later today, the weather will be completely different again. But right now, this is how things are. And that is absolutely fine. Moods change. They blow over. There is no need to take any action. What a relief. Most children enjoy this weather exercise. It makes them aware of the rain, the sun, and the storm inside them and teaches them to identify less with their moods. I am not the downpour, but I notice that it is raining. I am not a scaredy cat, but I realize that sometimes I have this big scared feeling somewhere near my throat. What is most important is that they allow themselves to feel the way they feel. How to do this at home. Accepting the weather. Draw an image that illustrates your current weather report. At the end of the day, check to see if the weather is the same or if it has changed. It helps to know that nothing ever stays exactly the same. On your way home from school, note the different weather conditions. Feel the rain, the cold on your cheeks, the wind that nearly blows you off your feet, the sun that warms you up. Maybe you also notice that thunderstorms either scare you or excite you. What mood are your parents in today? And how about your brother, sister, or friends? See if you can observe them like you would the weather outside, in a non-judgmental way. Sometimes it rains, and sometimes it is sunny. This holds true for all of us. Chapter 7. Handling Difficult Feelings. Feelings are a response to something you are going through, thinking, or doing. The four basic feelings are anger, sadness, fear, and happiness. Emotions can always be felt in your body. They can hit you so hard that they totally unsettle you. It is possible to get completely carried away by both pleasant and unpleasant feelings, such as love, desire, shame, insecurity, loneliness, sadness, or fear. You can feel caught right in the middle of them. More neutral feelings, such as equanimity and thoughtfulness, although less noticeable than anger or fear, exist almost like inaudible background music, and they influence your mood in subtle ways. As soon as feelings make themselves felt in your body, they are joined by thoughts in your head. Kids attach judgments to these feelings, such as, if I show that I'm sad, they'll probably think I'm a wuss. Or they immediately register other people's thoughts about them, as in, if you're going to be angry, you'd better go to your room. I don't want to see such a face at the table. These ideas create the impression that negative feelings are not okay. And, in fact, could make your child feel that she or he is not okay. Nothing could be further from the truth. Feelings are simply feelings, and it's important that your child gets the message that you are not your feelings. You have them. In contrast to what we often think, feelings do not last all that long. They often appear to last longer than they really do because we worry about them. By teaching your children to admit, feel, and acknowledge feelings, you teach them something of fundamental importance. No feelings need to be suppressed, changed, or expressed immediately. It is enough to feel them and to pay friendly attention to them. I remember one day when I was sitting at the table, preparing my classes for the next day, when my teenage daughter came home with a friend. Something was wrong. When I offered them some tea, the friend burst into tears, her skinny shoulders heaving. Her parents were getting a divorce. Haltingly, the story came out. Her father had a girlfriend. All of a sudden, he was seeing someone else. The pain was intense. The hurt, immense. My daughter said nothing but wrapped an arm around her friend and listened. Listened intently. She gave the story her full attention, without interrupting, without judging. She just nodded, her eyes wide with understanding. Like a wise old woman, she was supporting her friend, and I could see just how much that meant. My daughter knew that dealing with difficult feelings is often not about solving anything, crying in sympathy or playing the blame game, but about attention. Very loving attention. There is no such thing as a difficult feeling. There really is no such thing as a difficult feeling. That said, it may be difficult to handle feelings and the resulting thoughts and behavior, especially when the feelings are big and intense. A feeling tells you something about how you experience things, not necessarily about how things really are. When it comes to handling feelings, the trick is to teach your children the following. They need not get carried away by their feelings or suppress anything. They can feel feelings in their body, stay with them a while, bring attention to them, and notice that they change. Kids also benefit from putting feelings into words or drawing them. This is pain, or this is anger, or I feel happy or betrayed, and that looks like this. They are not their feelings, they have them. I am not a crybaby, I just happen to feel sad. While all feelings are okay, not all behavior is. We don't necessarily choose our feelings, but we can choose how to express them. A mother tells me about her son, who often gets completely overwhelmed by his feelings of betrayal. Indy has a great sense of justice. He shared a secret with a boy in his class. It was the code for an internet game. The boy promised not to tell anyone, hand on heart. The next day in school, several more kids knew the code. When something like that happens, Indy gets distressed and angry to the point of feeling sick. He doesn't want to go to school anymore, but wants to crawl into bed instead. 9-year-old Sophie tells me she is afraid of just about everything. I'm afraid of the dark, of ghosts under the bed, of fights, of things I'm not good at. I'm afraid of walking home from school by myself. Her eyes fill with tears and her lip quivers. When I ask her to locate the scary feelings and to feel them, she says, I can feel them in my stomach. They're moving, up and down and back again. I ask her to stay with this movement for a while and to pay close attention to what happens when she does. She closes her eyes and concentrates. It's still moving, she says, and then, but it gets less after a while. I ask her to stay close to this feeling for as long as possible, very tenderly and friendly.
2 minutes later, she opens her eyes and says, with complete surprise, "It's gone. The scary feeling is gone." She skips back to her class. Like adults, children can be quite confused by the intensity of some feelings and often do not know how to cope. But as a parent, you can teach your children to be present with these feelings, to give these feelings their open, unprejudiced attention. Being given such sympathetic permission to feel sadness, fear, anger, and happiness is reassuring to children. It helps them deal with the severity of the weather and realize that, as with a rainstorm, every feeling passes. If a feeling does get the upper hand, it can be helpful to redirect them by playing with the dog together, giving them a big hug, or holding them close. Sometimes kids want to talk about their rotten feeling. In that case, really listening is enough. But when they do not want to talk about it, all you need to do is tell them that you will be there for them if they do. Anger management. Anger is extremely common and can be classified as a difficult feeling. Sometimes we may feel we shouldn't be angry. We may think that feeling angry is not okay. We may have trouble accepting the feeling, particularly if it's very intense. But there's nothing wrong with the feeling itself. It's what we do with it that can be problematic. When we're angry, we might lose control or harm others by shouting or break things and regret it later. Sometimes the anger turns inward, causing children and adults alike to hurt themselves in response to the powerlessness they feel. In all of these cases, breathing practices can help lessen the powerless or out-of-control feelings we might have. Anger is a response to not getting what you want, attention, comfort, your way. Getting what you do not want, an argument, a bad grade, tension, something you do not like eating, a missed penalty shot, hurt feelings, gossip, hurtful remarks such as "you're so uptight" or "you can't be on our team because you're not good enough." I remember one spring morning negotiating with my then 6-year-old daughter about what to wear to school. It was 8:25 a.m. and school was about to start. It was April, but it was cold outside. My daughter crossed her arms and looked resolute. Her eyes flashed dangerously. "I want to wear my summer coat. I'm not going to wear that stupid winter coat." "Come on, Marlene, or we'll be late for school," I told her. "I'm not going to school unless I get to wear my summer coat." Her anger quickly got the better of her. She headed for the wardrobe to look for her summer coat. I managed to grab her arm, but she pulled herself free and started yelling, "I don't want to go to school, and you're hurting me." Of course, I didn't want to hurt her. Now what? School was going to start in 3 minutes. We'd be late. Then I realized that she was in the grip of anger and needed my help. She could break free of it herself. I called her name, looked at her, and said, "Marlene, I can see there's a lot of anger in you. That's fine." I caught a glimmer of interest in her gaze. "So anger is not all bad." "Could you and your angry feeling grab your winter coat and walk to school with me?" She nodded. We set off. The storm had blown over. We were a bit late, but that was all right. After school, we would be dealing with completely different things again. In and out of the maelstrom. 3 exercises at the end of this audiobook can help you escape the maelstrom more easily once you are in it. When practicing with the pause button,
Exercise 5. Children can learn to stop and take the time to note how they are doing. Looking at your inner self with curiosity and without judgment, rather than only focusing on what is happening on the outside, can be extremely revealing. Like many parents, children have a tendency to just keep going, from school to sports, then to homework, then to sitting in front of the television, without a moment to reflect on what is going on inside. By regularly pressing the pause button, you give yourself the time and space to notice that you are breathing and to feel what is going on inside of you. And as soon as you notice, you have a choice. Shall I continue with what I was doing, or do I need a short break, or do I need something else? Exercise 6, First Aid for Unpleasant Feelings, is about noticing, experiencing, and admitting feelings. Where in your body do you feel feelings of happiness and sadness? And how do you deal with these feelings if you do not suppress or ignore them, or allow them to get the better of you? Exercise 7, A Safe Place, offers children the chance to travel to a safe place in their own inner world, a wonderful place where they can be completely who they are. By regularly doing these exercises with your children, you encourage them to accept feelings as they are and not to react immediately. Over time, the children will come to realize that there is no need to be afraid of the intensity of feelings. They are simply there, sometimes lingering a while before disappearing again. In the same way that not everybody at a party is your best friend, some feelings feel much better in your body than others. But once you get to know them better, they may not be so bad, and may even possess surprising qualities. How to do this at home. How are you feeling right now? You can help your child to practice recognizing and naming all kinds of feelings as they occur. You can express an interest and discuss the feeling, for instance, by asking the following questions. Where in your body do you feel it? How would you like to respond? Can you direct your attention to this feeling and stay with it for a while, like you might sit with your favorite pet or your friend? Acceptance of the feeling as and when it occurs breeds recognition. Yes, that's what anger feels like, and that's what fear feels like. Sadness feels very different again. I can direct my attention to it. It helps. Kids also benefit from recognizing that they will survive intense feelings and will not be crushed by them. It is equally important for your children to see and respect your feelings of concern, frustration, impatience, sadness, and fatigue. Sometimes you have the energy for one last game at the end of the day. All right, but this is the very, very, very last one. At other times, you just do not feel like it. You are too tired and just want to sit and relax. And that is all right, too. Chapter 8. The Conveyor Belt of Worries. Worrying begins as soon as you want things to be other than they are right now. I worry about not being allowed to visit my aunt. My parents have fallen out with her, and now they won't let me go and see her anymore. She's my favorite aunt. My mind just keeps churning. It's giving me a headache. I often can't sleep because I keep thinking about everything I may have done wrong. I'm often embarrassed, and then I start thinking about that, too. I often worry about my father. I don't see him a lot because he lives in France, and that's really far away. We worry a lot, Yet we are often unaware of our worries and their connection to our thoughts, ideas, opinions, or doubts about things. We may think we can solve things by worrying, but that is a misconception. By introducing your children to the wondrous world of thoughts, you can teach them to have some influence over these thoughts. You can make the following suggestions. Don't believe all thoughts. The thought, "I'll never manage to get a good grade," is not true. Realize that you are not your thoughts. "I'm sure I'm not nice, pretty, or funny enough." Jot down your top three most common worries. Notice these worries whenever they occur in the next couple of days, without getting caught up in them. If you observe them and don't always take them seriously, your worries can automatically extinguish, like a flame deprived of oxygen. That said, some thoughts keep coming back. These deserve special attention. They may have an underlying cause that must be examined, acknowledged, and understood before they stop nagging you. What are thoughts? Thoughts are like little voices inside your head. Like a first-class storyteller that cannot stop, this voice just keeps on talking. It interferes in everything and has an opinion about everything. About you, about the rest of the world, about your clothes, and about what you eat, do, or should have done. Thoughts are about what you find difficult or fun, about what you want to do and be, or about that annoying incident last week, about the past, present, and future. Everything passes along the conveyor belt of worries. Some thoughts are about yourself. "I just cannot put tomorrow's test out of my mind, and I keep thinking I'll fail." Some are about others. "I often worry about people in other parts of the world. On the news, I saw people buried under large rocks after an earthquake. That's so sad. I wish I could do something, but I don't know what." Or, "That guy is such a loser. He looks terrible." Thoughts and feelings tend to hang out together. They rarely see eye to eye, but they keep seeking each other out. To give an example, "I still feel sad about moving to a new house, but I think I'm being childish, so I won't mention it." As a parent, you may be relieved because your child does not talk about the move, but because of these recurring thoughts, the sad feeling persists, and that deserves attention. Does the conveyor belt ever stop? Can we pause our thoughts? A lot of people wonder if they can ever stop their thoughts, and it is fun to do this exercise together to try to find out. One family member keeps time for 15 seconds. The others close their eyes and try to think of nothing. Close your eyes and think of nothing for 15 seconds. What do you notice? Do you keep thinking, "I'm not going to think of anything"? What were you thinking of? You cannot simply stop thoughts, and there is no need to. Thoughts are produced nonstop. Worries, angry thoughts, happy, fun, and naughty thoughts, ideas and plans, solutions and memories. But when these thoughts threaten to overwhelm your child, you can teach him or her to stop listening to the noise and see thoughts more like weather patterns in the mind, like passing clouds. By doing this, your child learns that he or she does not have to believe everything he or she thinks, especially since many thoughts are untrue. I think I'm going to fail my exams. I think I won't be invited. I think I'm